weeknights from 6
on 2FM.
And a big thanks to Africa O'Connell for driving us into the weekend here on 2FM. It is Friday, April 12th. I'm Shane Dawson and you are listening to Game On. Coming up between now and 7pm, Greg Allen is with us live from the Masters. Jane Mangan previews the Grand National. Austin O'Malley looks forward to a big weekend of provincial football action, while Aoife Murray has her eye on Sunday's Camogie League finals. Fergal Brennan joins Alan Cawley to chat Premier League and League of Ireland. And we'll hear from Shell's boss Damien Duff. A packed show ahead of an action-packed weekend of sport. As always, if you want to have your say, you can text us on 51552, WhatsApp 087 187 9200, or we're on X at Game On 2FM.
Game On 2FM.
Lots to get through. Austin O'Malley and Alan Cawley are patiently standing by. We have an Aer Lingus competition to give away tickets to, or a flight I should say, to England-Ireland and the Women's Six Nations very shortly. However, let us go straight to Greg Allen, live at the Masters. Greg, bad weather delayed the start of the Masters. Hopefully there was a bit more action on course. Indeed there was. What has been happening today?
Well, they resumed round one this morning, and it was a case of just getting, the last 20 players or so in after that 2.5 hour delay yesterday. Shane Lowry was one of them. He had a pretty dispiriting finish to his first round, insofar as he three-putted the 18th for a round of 73. And I'm afraid he also three-putted the first and the third holes on the resumption of round two, which started only half an hour after he finished his first round. And that's all, I'm afraid, led to a sort of a spiral to some degree. Now, he's not out of the question in terms of making the cut, but he's back on 4 over par after 12. There have been 5 bogeys in the second round. And, you know, the cut mark, the way the wind is blowing, and there's a lot of wind still lingering from the storm, it's not, you know, by any means a bad scenario here. The sun is shining, but it's a windy day. And a windy day in Augusta, as the course dries out, and it really is drying out, and the ball bouncing a little bit more as it does in Augusta through the weekend, it should get quite firm. It's tricky out there, that's the bottom line, and there are other players who are really suffering. For example, Jordan Spieth is 7 over, Bubba Watson 8 over, Brian Harman, the Open champion, 10 over, so Shane isn't the only one struggling, but he is struggling. He's back on 4 over par. The cut looks like falling at around 3 or 4 over, depending on how much that wind kicks up in the afternoon, and it is supposed to kick up more in the afternoon. Tiger Woods, incidentally, coping pretty well around here, and he's got a big sort of goal in terms of the cut, because he's on 1 over par, having started the second round on 1 over par after a 73, which he completed this morning. And if the cut falls at around 3 or 4 over, he's got a bit of, insulation between now and the finish of his round in 9 holes time. And if he makes the cut here, that will be 24 consecutive cuts, and that will be a Masters record to go with his 5 green jackets or Masters victories. So Tiger Woods, with a smaller goal than perhaps he would have had in the past, certainly at this point of the tournament, is on 1 over par, but well inside the cut mark, tied for 35th place. But Shane Lowry is outside the top 50, who will make the final rounds on Saturday and Sunday, and he needs to pick up birdies in the back nine. Lowry, 4 over after 12. Top of the leaderboard, one man who's really coped well is Max Homa, and the Ryder Cup player, 7 under par, 2 under for his round today, completed a round of 67 this morning. So Homa, one of the few real bright figures from the American defeated Ryder Cup team in Italy last September, he is doing really well here. He's tied for the lead with Bryson DeChambeau, the first round leader, who shot a 65 yesterday in that stormy sort of first day. A brilliant round of golf by Bryson DeChambeau. He's open with 3 straight pars, so DeChambeau 7 under after 3. Homa is 7 under after 9. Scotty Scheffler alone in third place. He's going to be teeing off with Rory McIlroy later, and Scheffler is on 6 under par, and on 4 under par now, I should say, back in a tie for fourth place is Nikolaj Højgaard of Denmark, the European Ryder Cup player, who shot 67, completed that 67 this morning, a fine 5 under par first round, and through the first 12 holes of round 2 in the wind, he's 1 over par. And I think any round in or around level par in this wind and with the course firming up will be a decent return. And currently Højgaard on 4 under par, tied for fourth place with Cameron Young, the American who finished second in the Open Championship at St. Andrews 2 years ago. Cameron Young is 4 under after 10 holes, and then in the group on 3 under, Cameron Davis of Australia and Taylor Moore of the United States and Corey Connors of Canada and Ryan Fox of New Zealand. So that completes pretty much most of the top 10. And Rory McIlroy, incidentally, is by no means out of this, but he will need a good round today. He's going to have to find a way in the wind to make strides towards the top. In other words, make some birdies. Another subpar round, even in the nature of a 69, 68, would, I think, put McIlroy right in it, because even on one under par after a 71 yesterday, he's as high as a tie for 14th place. So he's actually moved up the leaderboard, if that's possible, in the course of this second round without doing anything. That's because most players are dropping back, and McIlroy on one under par, something in the high 60s, might just do it in terms of being in contention over the weekend. And that's obviously where he wants to be as he attempts to win his first Masters green jacket, and possibly that would complete the career Grand Slam. Long way to go though from one under par by comparison to where the lead is on seven under par. So Homa and DeChambeau tied for the lead on 7-under, one clear of Scotty Scheffler and Nicolai Højgaard, the best of the European contingent on 4-under, and McIlroy, as I said, on 1-under, and Shane Lowry, sadly, back on 4-over par and needing birdies to just make the cut for the weekend. But Tiger Woods, that is a good story. If he stays where he is on 1-over par after 12 holes, he will definitely make the cut if he stays on 1-over par.
Greg, just before I let you go, you mentioned the deteriorating weather. How will Rory cope? He's out in, what, 40 minutes? Like, I know I'm kind of asking you here to predict how bad the weather's going to get, but Rory in particular.
Well, I think one of the things that has to be factored into Rory McIlroy's game right now is the fact that he visited Butch Harmon 2 weeks ago. Butch Harmon is one of the great coaches of the game, former coach of Tiger Woods, of course, former coach of Greg Norman, and Rory McIlroy says he's gone to Butch Harmon in the past to have a look at his swing. Of course, Michael Bannon is Rory's coach since he was a child, but he does have Butch Harmon look at his swing once in a while, and there were a few adjustments made, one of them on his backswing, so you might see Rory rehearsing a particular move on his backswing if you see it on television tonight. And that's a move that he's probably trying to bed into his system to try and make it natural. Now, the more natural that move becomes, perhaps he might be able to start firing a bit more at pins, so to speak, because his iron play this season has not been strong enough. And you know, when you're in the transition from having something of a golf lesson 2 weeks ago to putting it into play in the Masters at this ultimate type of test of approach play especially, it really is hard to get that exactly right. So he needs for kind of a switch to flick, I think, to really find perhaps the groove that he can start making a real run at the top of the leaderboard. I don't think he's going to have to make a massive run. I think 68, 69 today would see him within touching distance of the lead and certainly inside the top six going into the last 2 days. And if he is in that position, 36 holes to go in Masters, and we know how much changes in the Masters, but he needs something to happen. Yesterday there were signs that it was good, but there were also signs that there were poor swings in there as well. And he did get lucky with a few drives. The ball cannoned back into the fairway on the seventh in particular when it was heading into trees. That was worth a good shot, you know, certainly in terms of if he got a bad break there. So he needs something, I suppose, to settle in those adjustments that he has made before I think we can see him confidently kind of ripping into this and trying to have a chance over the weekend.
Okay, good stuff. We will be checking in again with Greg Allen later on in the show, but for now, Greg, thanks so much for dialing in. Competition time. Usually do it at the top of the show, but we said we'd dive straight into the Masters given the gravity of the competition, I suppose. I know Alan Colley loves the Masters, and a very happy man that Max Homa is currently out in the lead. But Aer Lingus competition time. This week, we've had a great Aer Lingus competition for you as the official airline partner of the Irish rugby team. Aer Lingus brings home advantage to every Ireland game, no matter where they are playing. And thanks to Aer Lingus, you could win a fantastic trip to London to support the Ireland women's rugby team against England in the Women's Six Nations. That is our overall prize to be won today. But thanks to Aer Lingus, we've also got a signed Irish rugby jersey to give away. So, for the chance to win a signed jersey and get into today's draw, just answer the following question. Ireland play Wales tomorrow in Virgin Media Park, formerly known as Musgrave Park. What Irish city is that stadium in? Text your answer, name and email address to 51552, and shortly we'll pick one person randomly and their name will go into the draw. And just one important thing on our big prize, you've got to be able to travel on Friday the 19th of April, so don't be entering if you can't get the day off. As always, RT competition terms and conditions apply. See 2fm.ie for all of the details.
Game on. Rugby.
Now, sticking with rugby, Leinster have made two changes to their team for tomorrow's Champions League Cup clash against La Rochelle with Will Connors and Jason Jenkins coming into the side. Connors plays in Europe for the first time since the opening round win against La Rochelle in December. Josh van der Fleer and Ross Maloney dropped to the bench for the quarterfinal at the Aviva Stadium, a repeat of the last two finals which La Rochelle won. The rest of the team is unchanged from the starting 15 that beat Leicester Tigers last weekend, while Luke McGrath and Michael Milne replace Ben Murphy and Keane Healy on the bench. Meanwhile, La Rochelle boss Ronan O'Gara has made one change to the team that scraped past Stormers, with Teddy Thomas starting on the wing and Dylan Leeds switching to full back in place of Bryce Doolan. In the Challenge Cup, Connacht boss Pete Wilkins has made four changes to his side to take on Benetton in the Challenge Cup quarterfinals on Sunday. Three of the four are due to injuries from the last 16 win in Poole last weekend. Andrew Smith comes in on the wing instead of Shane Bolton, but JJ Hanrahan will start at out half to replace Jack Carty, who misses out with a hamstring strain. Caelan Blade will captain the side from scrum half. There are two changes in the forwards, with Dara Murray and Paul Boyle coming in for Niall Murray and Jared Butler, who's undergoing graduated return to play protocols. For Ulster, Ian Henderson is fit to lead Ulster in their Challenge Cup quarterfinal against Clermont tomorrow. Henderson had been a doubt, having picked up a foot injury against Montpellier in the last 16 win. Prop Stephen Kitsoff is also included, having been dealing with an ankle issue since last weekend. Interim head coach Richie Murphy makes two changes to his starting side from the win over Montpellier. After missing out with concussion last week, Mike Lowry returns in the wing and takes the place of Will Addison, and Stuart Moore switching to fullback. In the back row, flanker Harry Sheridan comes in for Matty Ray among the replacements. Eden McElroy and Tom Stewart return, having been late omissions last week, while in what again is a 6-2 split, Marcus Ray will wear the 23 jersey. Elsewhere, some Irish rugby contract news. Peter O'Mahony has signed a new one-year contract with Munster. The 34-year-old stepped down from his role as Munster captain in November, and there had been speculation about his future, but his current contract set to expire at the end of the season. The Cork native was named club captain in 2013 and was Munster's longest-serving captain of the professional era, stepping down from the role after over 10 years earlier this season. So far this season, O'Mahony has made 5 appearances for Munster and 11 appearances for Ireland. So good news for Munster rugby fans there. We are taking a short break. Lots to come. Austin O'Malley on Gaelic football. Alan Colley, Fergal Brennan on association football. Back with Greg, Aoife Murray and Camogie. But up next is Jane Mangan on Aintree and previewing the big one tomorrow, the Grand National.
Game on.
Racing.
Now, Jane Mangan is on the line to chat racing ahead of the big one tomorrow. But before we look ahead at tomorrow, Jane, yesterday there were 3 out of 4 grade one winners for Irish trainers at Aintree, and it was more of the same today.
Yes, there's been 8 grade ones run over the 2 days at Aintree so far, and 6 of them have come back home to Ireland, and that is fantastic to see. Of course, yesterday as well, Emmett Mullins and Derek O'Connor teaming up with JP McManus to win the Hunter's Chase over the Evergreen Fences. So it's a carry on from Cheltenham. It is what we would hope for, what we would expect to achieve. And with that in mind, Shane, the expectation going into tomorrow's big race, with accounting for 27 of the 34 runners, you'd be very hopeful that we're going to take home a lot of that £500,000 pot.
Oof, just £500,000, not too shabby. Come here, before we look ahead at that, what was the highlight today for you?
It was probably Mystical Power. I think there's a little bit of romance there, the fact that he's out of Any Power, who won the champion hurdle by Galileo. And I suppose you now start thinking, could this horse emulate his mother and win a champion hurdle? Now, I'm not going to say he will definitely do that. He had to dig deep to fend off Gordon Elliott's Firefox, but he certainly has the ingredients and he's improving. So I think there was a big treble on for a lot of punters today. John Bonn, I know the way you're thinking for Gavin Cromwell, and Mystical Power Sandwich in the middle, 3 of them owned by JP McManus. A lot of people would have been on that treble, and it did come off. Predictable, some might say. That's rare in sport, isn't it?
Yeah, that's why a lot of people were on it, Jane. So, come here. We're hoping for more Irish success tomorrow. This is the time of year when even casual racing punters, their ears prick up a little bit and start to take notice. So, the Grand National, what are we thinking, Jane Mangan?
Well, what are we thinking? Well, the Grand National is the one race in the year where everybody buys the paper, maybe drops the pen on a horse, looks at the colours or the name that they like, and takes an interest. And I love that about the race. You don't even have to have a monetary interest. You can just watch it for the spectacle that it is. A lot of people will be watching for Rachel Blackmore, of course, the first and only woman to ride the winner of the race. She's on the Gold Cup winner, previous Gold Cup winner, Manila Indo. He's now an 11-year-old. He's bidding to become the first 11-year-old since Pino de Rey in 2014 to win the race. Cora Rambler, the reigning champion, he's coming back there with a favourite's chance. He's got 11-6 on his back. People might recall when Tiger Roll won back-to-back, he carried 11-5 the following year. So I think Cora Rambler's running the Gold Cup when he finished third last time to Gallop and Deschamps tells us that he's still particularly well-treated. Aside from the top couple, I am Maximus for Paul Townend, who had a marvellous day today and yesterday. That man seems to have a marvellous day every day anyway. Gavin Cromwell's Limerick Lace bids to be the first mayor since Nicol Coyne in 1951 to bridge a 73-year gap for a mayor to win the race. Of course, Jessica Harrington came close a couple of years ago with Magic of Light. There's an awful, I suppose, there's been a lot of rainfall, Shane, but today the ground definitely dried out a lot. And I don't think it's going to turn into the slog that a lot of people have thought, which may well, the likes of a Statler, the likes of a Galvin, horses that like a bit of better ground, they may well just come into the reckoning.
Okay. So listen,
What do you like for the race? Because I know this is a race that you'd be interested in.
This is one where I'm one of those. I'm still in the novice category here, Jane, where I'll get the paper out now this evening after the Shelburne match. I'll go home and I'll stick it on the dartboard and just hope for the best.
Sometimes with the Grand National, that's all that's required.
That's the level I'm at, and I think yourself and Ruby know that. So no one wants to hear what Shane Dawson is thinking. What is Jane Mangan going with?
We do like to know that when it comes to the Grand National, 30 fences, 34 runners, 4.25 miles, that sometimes form can become superfluous, and sometimes it's a case of who's lucky on the day.
This is very true. There's a few of us going siding towards Cora Rambler as predictable as that is, because last year I think we were having a chat and I had a sneaky shout and then you're like, no, Shane, that's a non-runner. So I'm not going with that again.
You're definitely not going to win, but you're not going to lose any money with a
this
non-runner.
There's always upsides. Right.
Anybody who's concerned about a horse coming from Cheltenham onto Aintree. Look, Mystical Power had a hard race at Cheltenham, won today. Jerry Colombe yesterday won the bowl in an emphatic fashion. So I wouldn't be worried if you're thinking that Limerick Lace or indeed Cora Rambler, who had such a good run in the Gold Cup, if you're thinking that might leave a mark, that might not necessarily be the case. Look, as I said, we field 27 of the 34. We predominantly have the best the best rated chasers in the country, in this country. So hopefully, of course, Willie Mullins in a little bit of a battle with Dan Skelton and Paul Nicholls at the moment for the British Trainers Championship. Nobody from Ireland has done that, win the Irish and the British Trainers Championship. Only one man has ever done that, and that's the great Vincent O'Brien many, many decades ago. So if Willie Mullins were to win or even place in the first couple of placings in the Grand National, he may well secure an unbelievable feat to beat all the British on their home turf in their own championship.
Wow. And that's been fascinating to watch that this week, Jane. And obviously, Dan Skelton's putting up a great showing as well, following on from his Cheltenham form. So that has been brilliant. But I'm liking the chances of Vanillier tomorrow for Gavin Cromwell. And the best piece of entry so far on top of the racing was the Stewards Inquiry yesterday when the three jockeys were giving their input and arguing their case. I thought that was brilliant television.
It's great television. I actually spoke to our producer from RTE after that piece of television asking, can we do the same over here?
Okay. So I'm going to speak to him as well and put in a good word for you. Don't worry.
Look, it definitely, you want to see behind the scenes footage.
Oh, yeah. Okay. You're I am Maximus, Austin O'Malley.
Yeah, I'm all in.
Vanillier for me.
Vanillier, I am Maximus. I'm being predictable here with Cork Rambler because there's nothing that resembles a name that I like at the moment until I get the dartboard out later on. Jane, go on, give us a name, Jane.
Well, I am Maximus is a bit of a Leicester City. They could win the Premier League or they could get relegated. I just don't know.
Okay.
I'm Cora Rambler. He's the safe bet. My each way bet is Manila Indo. I never mind the age. He's the class horse of the race, and Rachel Blackmore is a huge asset in these races.
Great stuff, Jane. Just before I do let you go, there's other Grade Ones on tomorrow, and else we should be keeping an eye on.
Yes, I'll be shouting for Florian Porter in the Liverpool Hurdle. He ran such a good race in defeat at Cheltenham, but Tupo isn't lining up to reoppose. This horse was second in the race 2 years ago. He was third to Sire de Berlay in the race last year. Gavin Cromwell has two chances in the big one. But I'd say if this fella won, he wouldn't mind taking home that race too.
No, most certainly. And we're all going to get on to Mr. McCann, the RT racing producer now.
I'm texting him as we speak.
Put on the pressure.
Put on the pressure. Jane Mangan, thanks so much for taking the call. We will be reviewing Olive Aintree on Monday as well. Ruby's back. So myself and Alan won't have to fluff it.
And I'd be looking forward to speaking to him about it, Shane. It was brilliant, brilliant TV.
No, it absolutely was. It absolutely was. And hopefully tomorrow will be more brilliant TV, and that there is Irish success. Austin O'Malley is still with us. Aoife Murray still to come. Alan Colley, you're up next after the break in the company of Fergal Brennan as we chat football.
Game on.
Football.
Now, Alan Colley, you were biting your tongue when we were chatting about golf. You interjected on the race, and that's allowed. But now, this is why you're here.
Okay,
I didn't even
introduce
you, and it's like, Jane, I have a question for you. Straight in.
You know I'm sport bash here.
Yeah, I'm glued to everything. You did say it's your favourite time of the year with the Masters. And
yes.
The Grand National, and plenty of football to discuss. Alan, you've already had your say, so I'm going to invite Fergal Brennan into the conversation first as we preview the Premier League. But first, what a week of European football. Champions League, even the Europa League, it's alive and well, and that is hopefully going to make for a cracking weekend of Premier League action, Fergal.
It is. Tuesday and Wednesday certainly lived up to the hype in terms of goals and excitement. I think I was one of the millions that was frustrated that the games were on at the same time. So I was kind of flicking between both games on Tuesday and Wednesday. But he set up a situation whereby, because it's such a quick turnaround and we go again with it again next week, that it gets resolved a little bit too quickly. I think because it was so exciting, I'd like a little break so that I could kind of build back up to it again, or maybe have it spread out a bit more so you can get to watch every single game and every bit of action. But four cracking games, not really that too much to give away in terms of an advantage. There was obviously draws for the two Premier League sides, and Atletico have got a bit of an edge on Dortmund, Barcelona the same with PSG, but as the kind of cliche goes, everything's still to play for when they go again next week.
Absolutely. Will we see a reaction? Paul from Sligo texts in here, Liverpool have faith. Liverpool came from 3-2 in 2 big games in the past. They can do it again. Before we even look ahead at Europe, we will be previewing that in due course. Liverpool have to get over Crystal Palace this weekend, Alan Colley.
Yeah, you'll see a big reaction. I don't think I've ever seen Jurgen Klopp as shell-shocked as he was last night, Shane. Especially when that third goal went in, it was almost as if he couldn't really believe what was happening right in front of him. And I think he has to take some responsibility as well in terms of the team selection, because there was a real flatness about them. Now, he'll argue, obviously, they're firing on all fronts and maybe it was the right thing at the time to leave a couple out. People will argue, did he give enough respect to Atlanta? That's up for debate, because of you don't make that amount of changes if you're going in. If they were playing Man City or Arsenal, you would have picked a much stronger team. So they're all the things you can debate and discuss, but ultimately it comes down to the players then that are on the pitch. And there were just all the brilliant things that we associate with Liverpool in terms of their energy and that frenetic nature that they play with, which are all great things, weren't there to be seen last night. But I also think as well, Shane, and I mentioned this even with the Man United game here last week, comparing them to Arsenal and Man City, it's too chaotic when you watch Liverpool. Now, it's hard to criticise them for them being like that, because that's one of the reasons we love Klopp's teams, and he's always spoken about the rock and roll style football and up and at them and the energy that they play with, which is brilliant to watch. But they're always offering up chances and opportunities to the opposition, and it's too chaotic in terms of almost like a basketball match up and down. They never seem to have any real control of a game, that they can speed up the tempo or slow it down when needs to be. It always seems to be 100 mile an hour kind of stuff, whereas you contrast that to Arsenal. Defensively they're so sound, the experience of Jorginho and even Declan Rice now in the midfield that can slow things down, speed it up when they need to. And I always felt at some point across the season that might be Liverpool's Achilles heel and what might catch them out, and we've seen that in the last couple of weeks, obviously against United and particularly last night against Atalanta.
Liverpool dealing with the load, as are Manchester City, Fergal. Am I right in saying Pep was alluding to that they're in big, big trouble in relation to injuries and resting players ahead of Luton tomorrow?
Yeah, a portion of it comes off the back of Rodri's comments after the Real Madrid game, where he effectively, I don't know whether he was allowed to say this or meant to say this, but he said that he needs a rest and that he's been speaking with Guardiola and the coaching staff and that they're going to factor in a rest for him at some point between now and the end of the season. What game or games that will be, we don't know. I think Guardiola's a bit irked by that, not because he necessarily disagrees with Rodri, but I think that was a conversation that they'd had amongst themselves, and maybe Rodri just kind of let a bit of extra information slip. And then in his press conference today, he effectively said that no, there'll be no rests because of the injuries that they've got. Obviously, Kyle Walker and Nathan Ake missed out in midweek, and it doesn't look as if they're going to be able to play this weekend, or certainly not the full 90 minutes, because he wants to give them the best chance to be able to play the return game against Real Madrid. So they are feeling the strain, but they're feeling the strain in respect of the titles that they're pushing for. They're still in an incredibly strong position to repeat what they did last year. You look at their run in between now and the end of the campaign, it's very feasible that they win every game. You'd expect them to get through the FA Cup semi-final and probably win it. And for me, if they beat Real Madrid in the semi-final, I think they'll go on and win it again. And that would just be a whole other level, a double, treble. I said last season that Real Madrid were the team to stop them getting the treble. They didn't. And I personally think it's the same situation this time around. I think Arsenal will get a bit closer and Liverpool will be right there. But I don't see a league game where they drop, I'm not going to say any points, but enough to let the others take over and win the league. I think it's more likely that Liverpool or Arsenal drop more points or maybe lose a game or two between now and the end of the campaign. And that's the situation. In terms of resting players, they've got the deepest squad, so they do have a better ability to do it. I think you'll see a lot of changes for the Luton game tomorrow because they can afford to do it. Even with those injuries, they've got better young players to bring in. Rico Lewis, Oscar Bob are already Premier League level players for me. And just the experience of squad players that they can bring in to play 10 or 15 games a season. Arsenal and Liverpool don't have that strength in depth that Pep Guardiola does.
Arsenal host Aston Villa on Sunday. Fergal mentioned there, Alan, that Liverpool and Arsenal might be more likely to drop points. Will Arsenal drop points on Sunday, in your opinion?
I don't think so, no, and there's nothing to suggest that, Shane. I know, obviously, Fergal is hyping up Man City to the max there, but I've been all over.
to be fair to Fergal, I think it was more during the course of the rest of the season that they might drop points.
And that's fine. And of course, like, who are we to argue against Man City? And the same with Liverpool. I know they've had the little wobble, obviously, the last week, and it looks like things will be a lot harder for them. But three brilliant teams, as we said all along, and the title race has been absolutely fantastic. But if you look at Arsenal's form since Christmas, 11 games, they've won 10, Shane, and the draw, they haven't been beaten. The draw came against Man City, which I felt was a brilliant performance as well. I mentioned here during the week, and I'm really sticking to my guns on this, I don't think it would be a bad thing for them to go out of the Champions League. Everything is resting on the league for them this year, and if he was to get one over Guardiola or Arteta, it would be some hell of an achievement for him and for Arsenal, and to get them back obviously onto that elite table. That I really fancy them to do that. Villa have hit a stumbling block in the last couple of weeks. I think they've only won 1 in 5. The game last week against Brentford, they were 2 up and they ended up 3-3 against an average Brentford team as well, so that's been disappointing. Spurs have a game in hand on them, so they will expect a reaction, but I think obviously with the European game they played last night, they won as well. I think that's where Emery will be aiming. Obviously he'll still want to try and finish fourth, but I think they've kind of lost their way a little bit on that in that regard because of Spurs' form. But so I think Arsenal will beat them, and at home as well. Arsenal are in unbelievable form.
Fergal, last word to you. Arsenal, Liverpool, Manchester City is the current top three. What will the order be come Sunday night?
I think it'll be the same. To kind of back up what I said before, I think those points that could potentially be dropped will come in the next few weeks. Yeah. I think all of them will win this weekend. I think the kind of role that they're all on, the fact that Man City have got I don't want to do Luton down. They've been good in recent weeks and they're making a scrap to stay up, but City will have too much for them. I think, as Alan mentioned, that slightly shorter break in between games will mean that Arsenal have got an edge on Aston Villa, and Crystal Palace are just kind of cruising. They know that one or two more wins and they're mathematically effectively safe. And Liverpool, given how bad they were last night at home, there has to be a response. So I think it will be as you were on Sunday night. And we just kind of reset and go again for next weekend.
We go again, Fergal Brennan. Thanks so much. Alan, you're sticking around to chat League of Ireland. Let's hear from Damien Duff Shelburne, boss, who sits top of the table at the moment.
Yeah, it's a great start. A very good start. There's no getting away from that. But just 3 rounds to go.
Does it change the mentality of the players somewhat with a target on your back now that you are league leaders going into round two as such?
Yeah, listen, I guess we're not a surprise package, not just this year, but maybe the second half of last season now. Obviously, we're probably opposition teams maybe showing us a little bit more respect than even individuals. I think out of the last 4 player of the months, we've won 3 of them. So even that, from an individual point of view, there's some marked men in our team. It's going to be harder for them to perform. So, no, it's challenges that we're all ready to face and challenge.
Alan Colley always accused me of being pessimistic when it comes to Shelburne. The increased capacity at Tulka Park. Three of the last four Player of the Month awards. Shelburne player. Shelburne sit top of the table. Damien Duff in good form. North Dublin derby this evening. It's going to be a crack of a night, isn't it?
And Shane, it's about time you've been like this. And be confident about your team. And be happy where they are. And just enjoy the moment, Shane. Because as I said, it's been doom and gloom for far too long.
Now roll on Bowes 3-0 tonight.
Now they're riding high. Relish it and enjoy it. Like Mr Duff says. Because it is a great time to be a Shelburne fan. They've had an unbelievable start, Shane. I fancy them to beat Bowes as well. Obviously, Bowes have had a change of manager in the last couple of weeks, and it's been a tough start for Alan Reynolds. They're under a little bit of pressure going into that. But I just think Shelburne's form has been so good since the start of the season. Unbeaten. That nearly came to an end last week, obviously, against Drogheda. But it shows their character, Shane, that they're never beaten, and they dig in and they claw out a result from that, even though it probably wasn't their best performance of the season. Do I think they'll win the league? If you're going to ask me that, I don't.
I don't want to know.
I don't think they are going to win the league.
Yourself. Yeah.
But here's the good news for you. Here's the good news. I don't think they're going to win the league, but I definitely think they'll maintain their form in terms of those European positions. And again, that's more development and progression and all those building blocks that Damien Duff is putting in place. Because I still think to win a league title, they probably just need to strengthen the squad a little bit. But their 11 is very good, and that's what they're showing on the pitch at the moment. And just enjoy it while it's happening, Shane.
As James McMahon was, I think, writing the Gaelic preview on the RT Sport website, there was another article on the RT website as well that alluded to, in Masters Week, the league's equivalent of Moving Day is the second series now. So this is when we kind of see the more on paper stronger teams coming to the fore. So you would imagine with that in mind that the likes of Shamrock Rovers, who host Sligo Rovers, Derry, who are in Drogheda, will come out with victories, and Pats again against Dundalk with Brian Gartland and Liam Burns on an interim basis there. Is this tonight, would you suspect that the matches will go to form as such?
You would think so, but that's the complete opposite of what we've seen so far, Shane, and that's been, I suppose, the surprise element of the league, that it almost reminds me of the Championship in England where everybody's beating everyone. It makes for, I suppose, an entertaining spectacle for us, but in terms of, as you say, the top teams going out beating the bottom teams, if you like, or the lesser teams, that hasn't been happening. But with those three names that you just mentioned there, obviously Derry away to Drogheda, if Derry have aspirations to win a league title, and I know they have aspirations to win a league title, they have to be going to places like Drogheda and beating them, Shane, and that's where the pressure comes on. The same with St. Pat's. They've had a slow start, but a brilliant result last week against Shamrock Rovers might get them back on track, and they should be beating Dundalk as well, who there's obviously turmoil on and off the pitch with Dundalk. And then the other one that you mentioned, I'm heading up to Tallaght now, Shamrock Rovers, who again, and we keep saying there'll be no panic buttons pressed, but I think at 9 games in and the gap that's opened up with Shelburne, I don't think Stephen Bradley will want that to get any bigger, and there will be slight concerns about, I suppose, the inconsistency that they've showed so far. So I think in this second series, and to go back to your point about what James was writing in the moving time, I think Shamrock Rovers need to start getting themselves on a bit of a run now, just to put the fear into the rest of the teams, because I still think they're going to win the league. But the longer it goes on where they are inconsistent and that gap keeps widening, that's when the pressure will come on them.
One match I did mention, Waterford Galway, how do you see that one playing out?
A draw.
Sitting on the fence. Alan, enjoy Tallaght Stadium. Thank you so much for popping in. We'll be speaking again on Monday, reviewing all of the Premier League.
And you enjoy Tallaght.
I always do.
Do.
The Dublin institution that it is. For those who can't make talk of Park, Shelburne Bowes is live on RT2 television. We will be reviewing all of the football. We might even chat about Ollie Gunnar Solskjaer on Monday, because we might have more news about that then. Who knows? Austin O'Malley is here to chat Gaelic football, though. Stay with us here at Game On.
Game On.
Gaelic football.
Now, Austin O'Malley is here to chat football. There is Ulster and Leinster Championship action this weekend. We saw a couple of upsets last weekend. Austin, might we see more upsets this weekend?
Yeah, looking across the games there, you're just looking, I suppose, the one that stands out to me, and looking at maybe the trend lines and the form lines coming in, if there was to be an upset this weekend, I'd maybe fancy it to happen between Wexford and Louth. Just looking at Wexford's form coming in, you know, notable hit 419 in their last league game versus Carlow. They have a really, really nice balanced side. A couple of cracking forwards, Mark Rossiter, Sean Nolan, Ben Brosnan still, you know, the evergreen Ben Brosnan still doing his thing. They're a team that have settled very, very unlucky not to gain promotion, obviously. There was much talked about, I suppose, the penalty that cost them in that game against Leitrim, that obviously was the turning point in their season, really, when you think about them you know, not being promoted and so on. So that's the one that I would maybe lean into and think there could be an upset there. Louth obviously retained their Division 2 status, still I think adjusting to life under Gerard Brennan, playing a little bit more of expansive a game than they did under Mickey Hart. So if there was to be an upset, I think it might be there. That one.
So you're not counting on Wicklow defeating Kildare and therefore winning back-to-back championship games in Leinster for the first time since 1989.
What a great year it was. No, I'm looking at that there. I just think it's a must-win game for Kildare, and I just think, given the season they have, I know that they have obviously lost, you know, 7 league games coming in, and I just think it's a must-win game for them. When you look at Wicklow, and in terms of what Wicklow done last week was just incredible, and I think the outpouring of emotion that came with that, and obviously the physical exertions of it as well, for them to turn it around and get themselves up again and get themselves going, it's, you know, and they don't have huge depth within their squad where other squads, you know, could lean into that. So I'm really looking at a Kildare win there, and I think just from a Kildare perspective, just the players need to stand up and they need to fire a shot this weekend. And you know, there's been a lot of talk about, you know, the pressure that Glenn Ryan and his backroom team are under, but I just think, you know, Kildare's key leaders, the Paddy Woodgates, the Dan Flynns, these guys, they have to stand up and deliver this weekend in order for Kildare to you know, secure their kind of Sam Maguire status. And look, they've obviously an easier side to route to a Leinster final if you can look at it from that perspective.
Yeah, it would be massive to get to a Leinster final. Kildare spent the week in Fota Island in preparation for Sunday's clash. Perhaps Ron O'Gara and the La Rochelle boys might have been in
something up there. And, you know, and there were probably a lot of the, you know, you're often thinking about the analysis maybe coming up into it. They probably were hedging their bets that it was Westmeath that they were going to be, you know, so there's probably had to be a bit of a U-turn maybe on that side of things as well coming in. So that could have maybe, you know,
that's a very good point.
Yeah, that's something that, you know, you know as a backroom team, you'd be eyeballing your next opponent from way out and getting your house in order. So that could potentially be a little thing that could catch them, but I still think they'll have enough to get across the line.
Also in Leinster, Meath's 5-goal salvo in the Leinster semi-final win in 2010, now an embedded bookmark in recent GA history, was the last time that Dublin lost a match in their province.
It's absolutely incredible when you read that and think of the dominance they've had for, you know, 13, 14 years. It's just incredible what they've done. Looking at this weekend, I think, look, you know, looking at them against Derry obviously took them out in the league final, but going away from that game, I think there's more in Dublin. And I think that, you know, coming into this game, I have a feeling that they're going to make a statement this weekend. You know, against Meath, looking at them last weekend, they're functioning quite well up front, hit, you know, 3-19 there, and like, but conceded 3-12. So still,
Colin O'Rourke would kind of alluded to that.
If
we defend like that against the Dubs, it'd be 3 goals in 10
minutes.
Yeah,
and when you look at the firepower Dublin have, when you look across Paddy Small, Conn, all these guys, like they will absolutely gut them if they come with that. So, Colm O'Rourke, obviously, when he took over, he wanted to play a little bit more of an expansive game, a kicking game. So they're getting it right at one end, but they're still, their defensive setup is still a work in progress, and it could be a rough afternoon for them if they concede early. So you'd fancy Dublin to continue there. And of course, we cannot mention this weekend without the returning of the, I suppose, the holy trinity of Stephen Cluxton, Mick Fitz and
James McCarthy,
you know, coming back again. So that's the type of depth that you're looking at there again. So Dublin for a victory there in Croker.
Yeah.
I could only see that going one
way. I feel
way.
Sorry for David O'Hanlon. That's who I feel sorry for.
Yeah,
he's
yeah.
a smashing goalkeeper.
Absolutely.
And now so is Stephen Cluxton, to be fair.
100%. Like, and he's done nothing wrong. And he's been standout during the league in terms of his shot stopping and his kick out and also what he's given them even coming up from the boot with regard to frees and so on. So he's been he's been polished.
Dublin winning a lot of love on social media for naming their 40-man panel as well, actually. Perhaps other counties will follow suit as well, because it does recognise the lads who are kind of talking now training and putting in the hard yards as well, behind the scenes. In Ulster then, we've Down Antrim and Fermanagh Armagh. Down Antrim on Saturday night and Fermanagh Armagh on Sunday afternoon. Armagh embarking on another journey of expectancy, really.
Yeah, a journey of expectancy. It's a great way to put it, I suppose. Looking at their league form, like, they were one of the teams that stood out and impressed me over their, you know, over the National League. I thought that they had really established themselves in terms of a clear identity, the way they wanted to play the game. A lot of very expansive football, again, kicking the ball quite a lot. Their forwards were looking pretty slick as well. And even their transition, I thought it improved in terms of getting ball from back to front. But the league final shown again, I just thought they got a little bit tentative and went into themselves. Came strong in the latter portion of it, but obviously Donegal edged them out. So, like, the thing about this game, like, Fermanagh have the capability of making this very, very tricky for our man. You know,
it's in Brewster as well.
It's in Brewster Park, yeah. And, like, you know, when you look even back to, it's in their DNA. They you know, under Rory Gallagher in 2018, they took Armagh out with a very, very, you know, solid, compact defence, soaked up a lot of pressure and hit them on the counter. So I'd be expecting Fermanagh to make that really, really awkward for them. But given the form and the trend lines, looking at what, you know, Armagh produced during the league, I think they'll have enough to get across the line. When you look at what they have, Conor Turbutt, Rory Grugan, Rian O'Neill, you know, Stephen Campbell, Ushin, like, they have a lot of quality there. So you would suspect that they would come through that, but they'll get a stern test.
Mm. Oh wait, the last time they lifted the Anglo-Celt, given the draw as well, it'd be a disaster if they didn't make the final.
Absolutely, absolutely.
And that's going to add even the more pressure to them, in considering that we've always talked about, even I think you and I were speaking in the league for the league final about, they're always that, oh, they're up and coming, they're going to do something.
Yeah, this is their year, they have to deliver, I think. And just in terms of, you know, the way they have been playing, and I think, you know, the soundings around Kieran McGeaney, you know, I really think that they need a performance the weekend, and then that should set them up to really take on you know, which is a, you know, a minefield of an Ulster championship again.
Down will be well fancied against Antrim. I think there's five or six debutants in the Antrim team. Obviously Down are going to be under pressure from the Croke Park loss recently. They're at home as well, so a bit of a free shot for Antrim and a lot of pressure on Down.
It is absolutely a free shot for Antrim, and, you know, looking in at Down against Westmeath, like, a huge credit to Desi Dolan, I think in terms of the way that he nullified Down. And, like, if Andy McEntee is looking in and he needs a formula to beat Down, you know, with the way Westmeath shored up that centre channel and kept Down out, and, you know, from scoring goals, and Down had been, you know, they've ran through the league, they've scored 14 or 15 goals, so there's something in that in terms of if you want to beat Down, you've got to shut them out in terms of goals. So you would expect still that Down would have enough to come through that. And I think, again, you know, coming out of the league final, they probably have learned a bit. You know, they left a lot of scores behind them that night as well. I thought they shot under pressure, even though there was great pressure from Westmeath, but they just weren't that clever in front of goal. So I would expect them to come through that. But again, Andy McEntee has the potential, you know, to set a team up to cause trouble. Even though I know he's running and he's given debutants there, but I would think, again, the running power and the quality that Down have would be enough to see them through that.
Can Down cause teams problem this year?
I think they can. I think they can, with the way they play. You know, watching them through the National League. Like, the way they transition ball, the width that they bring to the way they transition ball, it can really, really hurt teams. And again, you know, they got in and they prized a lot of oppositions open, and they got those goals. So I think they can. I certainly think they can. I think Conor Laverty is a very, very bright and astute coach, and he's a guy that has seemed to have built a really, really strong team spirit there, and he's pulled the whole thing together. So I would not be surprised if Down took out another big gun in Ulster, the Ulster Championship. But first and foremost, they got to get across the line this
over
weekend.
Antrim. That's exactly why I asked you, because I heard nothing but good things about Conor Laverty. So it's a case of, like, will they actually
very
cause?
Bright and astute.
Okay, great stuff. Austin O'Malley, thank you very much for popping in to preview this weekend's Gaelic football action. There is the small matter of the Camogie League finals as well on Sunday. Should be a cracking day out in Croke Park. And Aoife Murray was looking ahead at the Division 1A final between Galway and Tipperary.
Game on. Camogie. Hi, Shane. Really busy weekend coming up in the Camogie with a number of the league finals taking place. I suppose looking to Sunday and looking to the main event, Galway versus Tipperary. Look, in fairness, I think if you look back on the league, you're probably seeing the two teams that went on the most positive journey, and probably not starting off in the best way, but finishing really strong, and certainly probably finding out a huge amount about themselves, getting them in a great position for championship. You're looking at Galway going for the 3 in a row, and then Tipperary getting back into a league final, probably well for 15 years. This is 20 since they last won it. So I think it's going to be a really interesting battle. You'd have to look and say, if you're Dennis Kelly, you'd absolutely love a bit of silverware, really get them in the right shape for the championship. And I think it would be just reward as well for just how well they went about their business in the league. I think coming up against Galway, they're so tried and tested. They have a huge amount of experience across the field, and I think certainly coming in off the bench now as well, with the likes of Niamh Kilkenny, if she doesn't start, bringing her off the bench, that would be a huge boost to Galway. But certainly I think for Tipperary, looking at Saturday or Sunday, how did they overcome such a well-seasoned team in Galway? You'd have to say they're half-forwards to centre field are going to have to work extremely hard to try and stop that quick ball going in to the likes of the McGraths, where Galway normally like to hold two up top and create as much space as possible. That is certainly probably an area where Tipperary need to try and stop that quick ball out, because in fairness they can trust their forward line in a sense of taking their opportunities. They've been extremely goal hungry, and I think they've been quite ruthless up there as well. So that's a big strength for them. For Galway, you're seeing the likes of Aoife O'Donoghue trying to get as much influence in the game as possible. I think when she gets an opportunity to influence it, the result normally does favour Galway at the end of that final whistle. And certainly got game changers in their team, but I think it's going to be a really interesting battle. I hope it's a really good game. I think both teams deserve to kind of go out and show what they're made of. But certainly two teams who you'd have to look at further in the championship that will probably have big says on who wins the All-Ireland at the end of it.
Game on.
Camogie.
Game on.
Golf.
Now we'll go out the same way we came in, as Big Tom says. Greg Allen is on the line from the Masters. Greg, Rory was due out, Shane was fighting an upward battle. What's the latest since we last spoke?
From Shane's point of view, it's a bit better because he birdied the 14th, and that's taken him now to 3 over par, which is roughly, by the looks of things, the cut mark. Although the way the wind is blowing, that cut mark could go to 4 over par, but certainly if he stays at 3 over par, he should make it. He's just par the 15th, the par 5. That's normally a birdie opportunity, but in the wind, really just getting in with 3 more pars around that would be of 74. Doesn't sound great, but at the moment, making the cut for the weekend, when the conditions will calm down and we'll have great conditions, we're told, by the weather forecasters here. So Lowry has struggled. He made 5 bogeys in the first 12 holes, but he's also made birdies on the 2nd and the 8th. But that one on 14, I think, was critical because it's taken him outside the cut mark, which is the top 50 players, and they at the moment are the men on 3 over par are tied for 44th, and that's where Shane Lowry is right now. So if he pars in, I think that will be enough to make it to the weekend. And after bogeying the 18th hole this morning at the end of his first round, I think he would take that right now. It's a very, very, very difficult day out there. And as I was saying earlier, guys like Brian Harman are way out of the equation of making the cut on 10 over par. He's the Open champion, of course. Jordan Spieth, 7 over, really struggling to make this cut, which looks like falling at 3 or 4 over. Top of the leaderboard, we've also seen the wind effect there, because Bryson DeChambeau, the overnight leader, after that brilliant 65 and high wind yesterday, he's dropped a shot at the 4th, the long par 3. It's a tough hole, one of the toughest holes on the course, so he's back to 6 under par. Max Homa, who raced into the outright lead on 7 under after DeChambeau dropped that shot, Homa bogeyed the 11th, also one of the toughest holes on the course, the long par 5 down the hill, more than 500 yards at the start of the back 9, the beginning of Eamon Corner, and Homa has parred the 12th, he's on 6 under par. And Nicholas Højgaard has just birdied the 14th. So the significance of that is that Højgaard, Homa, DeChambeau and Scottie Scheffler, who's just underway in round 2, are all tied for the lead on 6 under par, 2 strokes clear of Danny Willett. An extraordinary story. The 2016 Masters champion had shoulder surgery around 6 months ago, hasn't played a tournament since. His first round back after that shoulder surgery was his 68 yesterday, dropped a shot on the first, but he's picked up an eagle a moment ago on the 8th to go to 4 under par, and Willett is in that alone at the moment in fifth place on 4 under. But a four-way tie for the lead. Højgaard 6 under, Homa 6 under, DeChambeau 6 under, Scheffler just starting on 6 under par, and Rory McIlroy's tee shot on the first, he's back on 1 under par, has gone into the bunker on the right hand side, and it really is a matter of whether he can reach the green from there. In other words, if he's far enough back in the bunker to be able to get his ball over the lip with his approach shot, as to whether he can save par on the first. Not a great drive for McIlroy, but on 1 under par, he's only 1 shot outside the top 10 and only 5 strokes off the lead.
Great stuff, Greg Allen. Gentlemen, as always, enjoy the weekend. Thanks so much for checking in with us. Now, returning to our Aer Lingus competition all this week, including today, we've given away signed Irish jerseys to our daily winners: Claire O'Brien, Donna Flannery, Kate McGreehan O'Grady, Geraldine Kelly Green, and today's winner, Lisa Riley. Now, for our overall winner from those 5 names, a massive congratulations to Geraldine Kelly Green. You've won a fantastic trip to London next weekend to support the Ireland women's rugby team against England in the Guinness Women's Six Nations. Thanks to Aer Lingus. That is all we have time for. Massive thanks to Ronan Lawler and Doc Martin for working on this evening's show.